This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, our own Chris Bricker travels with performers and musicians of the new old-time Chautauqua as they join with Washington State Parks and Pacific Northwest Native tribes to preserve the local Indian stories and heritage. And now we go inside the Compass.
This year, Port Townsend's new old-time Chautauqua and Washington State Parks were honored to be working with the Confederated Tribes of Colville and the Lummi Nation to continue to make significant and seminal steps to include Native voices in reshaping the stories of state parks. To ensure that tribal perspectives and stories are appropriately, accurately, and authentically presented. For more than 13,000 years, Native Americans have lived along the waterways of the Pacific Northwest. Columbia River tribes share the names of waterways that they call home, the Entiats, the Wenatchees, the Chelans, the Lakes, the Okanagans, and the Metows. Alta Lake State Park is tucked into the hills between Winthrop and Lake Chelan. Here, at a community celebration and ceremony similar to those held in five other Washington State parks this summer, Metow tribal member Randy Lewis brought us her creation story, and Mark Miller, whose family are the longest known continuous residents of the Metow Valley, speaks of the honor given him to preserve the last remaining land allotment in the Columbia Basin, not usurped by the white man.
Coyote went on. All animals changed. Elk, the great monarch of the mountains. Well, he used to be on the prairie. He was a great herding animal like the buffalo. He also was going to ambush man who is coming. And so he became banished to the mountains, no longer a prairie animal. You're going to find it harder to live. But man who is coming is going to appreciate you because of those that huge, huge spray of antlers you have. Well, throughout our country, coyote and quasqui changed and shaped our land. Every day, the animal people, one by one, would come. And in the darkness, they would share their songs, their story, their power, their shumach, and shtit, meriam, their spirit and their medicine, because man didn't have any. Every day, they would learn a different song. And every day, these voices in the darkness would tell them, see this plant, see this object here, smell it. And they would smell it. This here will cure this. This here will cure this. This here is good for this. And so they learned all the properties of the plants through their roots. They learned about all the stones. Rocks have songs. Rocks have power. Rocks were the first people. We honor them. We honor them in the sweat lodge. Rocks, fire, water. The twins, they floated down the river. And coyote, and Blue Jay flies up to let him know, we have somebody we want you to meet. You know, we want you to come here. So, click, click, he flies off. And he gets to meet coyote and the twins, Red Star and Blue Star. They tell him, you know, we've heard why you help this monster. You help him because you're afraid if you don't, he will kill your babies. He will destroy you. Well, if we were to let you free, if you would help us, we could free you. But not just you, we could free all of the people. all of the animals. And so he agreed. He said, well, how can I help you? You can help us by not getting in the way. So they floated down, and they divided right down on the river, a place called Arondo. They split up, and one went to land on one side, the other went to the land on the other side. And they moved down. Then at an appointed time, click-click, he rose into the air, screaming. Spectsman lifts his head to see Red Star on one side of the river, hollering at him, waving at him, taunting him. Spectsman goes, oh, easy lunch. Drops into the water and rises. And as he rises out of the water, nobody, because the boys, the twins, they were using the magic that they learned from the animals to camouflage themselves. Well, there he is over there. The trickster. Goes into the water, rises on the other side. As he rose on the other side, nothing. He hears the hollering again on back and forth. They go back and forth. Finally, he had weakened himself, had tired himself. Threw the first arrow, striking Spectsman in the eye, slicing part of his eye out. So he's blinded in rage. He rises out of the water. He drops into the water, then rises, spins in the air like a water spout, goes into the sky, turns into cloud, to vapor, then into lightning, and strikes back, but there's no one there. Then he rises. He pulls in as much fuel as he wants for some fire. And just as he leans back, he hears a scream in the air, and he looks up. Quilquilshnihi, arrow from the light. Well, they divide him up. To the south goes his laws that became the people of the Molala, the Waskapum, Wishkam, Wayam. Over to the others become the Umatilla, the Nez Perce, the Shoshone. To the north became the people of the Kootenai and the Shuswap. In the center, the head was thrust. It became the people from the North Okanagan, the head of the lake. And over to the west, the other claw was thrown. It became the people of Ntlahapm, the Thompson people. The heart became the people of the Wenatchee. And that's how people were created. Yeah. We share this story with you. Grandma and Grandpa, Grandma and my auntie, they would sit at night in the wintertime. They would sing every song. Every song, beaver's song, blue jay song, every song, every animal song that they could remember. So this is epic. It went on for night after night after night. But that's what winter's for, storytelling. Lessons to be taught. So thank you on behalf of the people of the Methow, the Nahamchin people. I want to say thank you for being here.
What we're kind of doing here is we have been working with the Washington State Parks to bring back the Methow people into this park, into other state parks, and to actually be able to gather here, you know, the berries and roots. But more than that, it's to actually put the names here, to feel as though you have stewardship on this land as well, and to recognize the entire story, not just the story of your people, the stories of their creation, but the story of how it came to be that this is a state park, and how it is that only the Miller family at this point manages to still live on that river. I'm hoping that maybe Michaela can say something for state parks, and then hopefully John, and then we're gonna have a handshake and a kiss. No, maybe not a kiss. And then we're gonna play some music, and then you can go.
Thank you, Paul. I want to thank you, Randy and Mark and Tom and your families for being here today to mark this moment. This beautiful area, now a part of Washington State Park System, cannot and should not be understood without the voices and the perspectives of the people who lived here and who were one with it for thousands of years. This land provided sustenance, medicine, teaching, life itself, and in turn was cared for by the Methow people. We'll never be able to make amends for the wrongs and the atrocities and the tragedies exacted upon your people, but we can learn from our past and we can do better. We can offer ourselves in service of ensuring that Methow people feel welcome here, that their voices tell the stories of this place if they choose to, and that they can bring their children here to learn their stories if they choose to. your presence here today honors the park staff, the visitors, and all of us, and it imbues this moment with potential and promise. I'm new to working for state parks, but I'm committed to finding new ways to working with the Mattel people to build our relationship and to work towards incorporating your voices and your perspectives in these very special places. Thank you very much for being here.
So now let me introduce one of the rangers here, John.
I also want to thank you, Randy. That was wonderful that you shared. I've had this conversation with Mark about being honored with that culture that is not necessarily shared easily, and rightly so. So I do very much appreciate that it was shared today and shared in a place that's special to you and us. So thank you very much. This place does exist in time, and we're here in the present. It has a past and it has a future, and it's got to be functional, it's got to be beautiful, and it's got to be special throughout all aspects of that time period. So, sorry, I got worked up a little bit. But I want to thank Old Time Chautauqua for coming out and putting on an event and making sure that it did not die in any way, shape, or form. It's a wonderful event to share diversity. We have the opportunity to invite other people that are in the area. I think they've been afraid so far to come up and join us. But we'll share that even further and make sure that it's a day that's memorable for everybody here. So thank you very much, Paul. Thank you.
Now we're going to do a handshake.
Thank you. Girls who feel comfortable about us, deep hugs are okay.
We're talking with Ranger John Whittet, and we are at this beautiful, beautiful lake, Alta Lake State Park. And we just had a ceremony where we are recognizing and honoring the territory on which the state park sits.
And it was the Meadow Tribe, and today we had Randy Lewis, Mark Miller. Wonderful, wonderful stories, and really honored us with that. So,
what were your feelings, John, when the handshake took place?
I was very happy to be included in that because I was more feeling honored by the elders being here. So being asked to step in and take part as a partner was very honorific. And I have to say that I was overwhelmed because the culture is not necessarily shared very often. And today we were given a lesson, and it was enjoyable. It was worthy of learning. And again, it was a gift.
Thank you, Ranger John Whittet.
Thank you. I'm Mark Miller. I'm actually the head of the Miller family. It's a German name. It comes from our great-great-grandfather who had settled the first trading post in Wenatchee, Washington. The government in the mid-1800s made an attempt to move the Indian tribes to reservations. Not all those Indians were willing to move because they were in their traditional homelands. And so then they created a system where they would give them part of a section of land, sometimes a whole section, and then part sections. And so those were called Moses allotments up from Wenatchee North. So originally my family was on MA-20, which is actually the site of Wells Dam. And they tried several different tactics. Eventually they decided that flooding of the pool behind Rocky Reach Dam was going to flood our property. And so they scammed the concept they had to condemn the land and basically forced my grandfather and his brother into the sale of it at pasture land appraisal. And they planned all the time to put a hydroelectric plant there. For our family, it was a pretty emotional, difficult time. And to do what they did required the collusion of Chelan County PUD, Douglas County PUD, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs representative. Those original notes, amazingly, were uncovered in the archives at Wells Dam. And so the Caldwell tribe sued the Douglas County and Chelan County PUD and won that lawsuit. Part of that lawsuit was a cash settlement, and part of it was payment for the submerged lands that were lost because of the dam. And then in part, I think they granted 5.5% of the power. So that's actually for sale. The Caldwell tribe has decided to sell that 5.5% of the power. Then what happened is we moved from Moses Allotment 20, which is about 8 miles away, to Moses Allotment 27, where my great-grandfather lived. His name was Sam Miller. My dad moved us there, and my grandfather had interest in it as well, so he basically got all the relatives' interest. ones he could buy. Some of them, just because of family things, wouldn't sell to him, but they would give the land to my dad. So we wound up with Moses Allotment 27. That's where we currently live. There were about five allotments in the last 2 miles of the mouth of the Methow. When they set those allotments out, the boundary for the allotment was actually in the middle of the river. So they used cairns and natural objects to describe the boundaries, but they actually put the boundary in the middle of the river to preserve the fishery for the Indians. Most of them, save two now, were all basically scammed away from the Indians. Indians didn't understand land ownership. You couldn't own the land. It's like owning the air. You can't own the water.
Different way of thinking and approaching and honoring the land.
Exactly. If you can't own the land, you can't own the air, and you can't own the water, owning the land didn't make sense. People would give you this land, and then other people would offer you money for it. And so the Indian lands were basically all scammed away with the help of a banker, a lawyer, and an Indian agent. And they would basically managed to get all the allotments except for MA-23, which we own all but 132nd interest in, and I'm trying to buy that 32nd interest from a person in Arizona who has inherited it, and then MA-27, where we currently live. So MA-27 has been guarded by my family from incursion and people offering to buy it since 1872. So I'm 62 now. And I was charged with the care of this land when I was 12 by my grandfather. I was basically set up in a position that I was going to be responsible for the land, our family, its direction, its culture. I've done my very best to do that. On the 100 acres that we have left, we have 7 home sites now that are all our family. So my brother is there, his daughter has finished college and she's moved back. My oldest daughter is actually my niece. My oldest sister had 2 children. Her husband was killed in an accident in 75 and she was actually killed in an auto accident in 78. So I inherited my niece and nephew and I raised them here and a daughter of my own. And basically we've worked very hard to honor this land, the river that passes through it. We're bonded to that river. So we swim in that river, we fish in that river. It's a very spiritual place. The lands in this valley, the valley that you were in, up in Methow, is my people's. So my dad was Wenatchee for the Wenatchee River and Methow. My mom was Antioch Rivers down by Wenatchee and Lakes, which is the band of Indians that went up into British Columbia over by Kettle Falls. So that's the 4 primary bands that my family originates from. We try really hard to save the traditions, carry those on, and then those are retaught to our grandchildren. And I tell people that parents are usually so busy with life. It's hard for parents to have the time to do meaningful teachings. Grandparents are actually the ones in families that are in the position to actually make meaningful teachings to grandchildren.
That's really true, Mark. That's the elders, right?
Yes, that's the part that's really important. The things that I know and am charged with and the traditions and the cultures were things I learned from my grandparents. You know, smallest of 7 children. And so my mom and dad were making a living for us. And the trips that my grandparents would grab us and take us on were the lesson learning events.
One of the personal questions I would like to ask you, over all of this time, and over all of this time that you've been aware that you have been given this charge, I know it's probably been a roller coaster, and it's sometimes maybe an emotional roller coaster. How do you feel right now as you sit here overlooking this lake?
It's actually a privilege, not a responsibility. Yes. It's a humbling honor to know that you were selected as a child. That puts you in a position of respect from other people that you probably are too young to deserve. I was then honored by other people that see you and know that you have this responsibility. and then they call you to teach you other things. So I'm a physical therapist, so I was studying at the University of Washington in Seattle. One of my grandfathers and family, one of our oldest friends, was one of the most powerful medicine men and lived in La Conner. I realized while I was studying westernized medicine that I'd watched these medicine men heal people. I watched them touch people. Since I've been 4 years old, I've watched these people touch people and heal them. While I was studying to pass exams, realized those people I thought were normal were unique, and realized that I needed to reach out there. And so I contacted my aunt to try to get the phone number for this medicine man. The guy's name is Morris Dan. But he didn't have a phone. He didn't have a TV. He did read the paper, you know, and he was a net fisherman. So he made his living on the sea. I didn't have a way to, you know, call him. And so I just went to La Conner, went to the Indian side of the community, got some gas, asked about where they lived. Gas station attendant could take me out and point to their door. That's how close I was. And I went there, knocked. His wife answers, and she's like Mrs. Claus. She's the wife of a healer. And she's the biggest, warm and hardest person you could imagine. Gives me a hug and is all excited I'm there. Tells me Morris is waiting in the living room. So I go into the living room and I say, "Grandfather, I'm here." And he looks at me over his newspaper with his glasses down and goes, "You're late. What have you been doing?" And I told him that I'd spent 2 hours helping a lady on the freeway that had a broken down car, getting her home and helping her husband get their car home. So that's why I was late for 2 hours. He's like, "That's a good thing to do on a Sunday morning." And I said, "Grandfather," he goes, "Yes, how did you know I was coming?" And he said, "You should not have to ask me a question like that. Sit down, we have a lot of work to do today." That experience in talking to my aunt to track him down, I didn't realize until later what the last thing she said to me was, "It's such an honor." And I thought it was about me reaching out to him. And then it occurred to me why she said it's such an honor. Because he was reaching out to me. I wasn't reaching out to him. He'd called me to La Conner on purpose, with a purpose. And so as I was in physical therapy school, once a month I would go spend a Sunday with him the whole day and learn Indian spiritualism, health, well-being. And he would learn westernized medicine, what I was learning. He was curious about that. But when you train with a man of that power, insight, you learn things that are not teachable and they still function. I have a unique skill set. I'm a licensed physical therapist, but I heal people in my practice and figure out what's wrong with people with the help of that medicine man. When he died, I was about 25, 26, young, ambitious, building this working professional empire. And I had to fly to his funeral because I didn't have time with my schedule to be there for the spiritual service for him would be a 3-day long service. I missed the first 2 days. So I got there for the funeral. There's probably 4,000 people in La Conner for this man's funeral. And his granddaughter intercepts me. My brother had to fly me to La Conner in a plane. And so she takes us through the crowd and points my brother to where our family is sitting, takes me up to her grandmother. And so I get there and I say, "Grandmother, I'm here." She goes, "Wow, you finally got here." I said, "I was really busy. I'm sorry. I had to fly." She says, "Okay, but you're here now." I said, "Yes." And I says, "You needed to talk to me. What can I do for you?" She goes, "Well, you're the right front pallbearer." And I was shocked because I'm 25, 26 years old. Yeah. I'm a young man. And I looked at her and I said, "Grandmother, my dad is here. My uncles, my aunt, my older brothers and cousins, tribal representatives are here. Are you sure I'm the right front pallbearer?" She said, "Yeah, I'm sure." I said, "What makes you so sure?" She said, "Because Moore said you were. To his funeral, he can pick the pallbearers."
Honor. Honor.
Huge. Yeah. Amazing honor. And I'm like, "Well, what are my responsibilities?" She goes, "Oh, well, you'll be the first to speak." I'm then really shocked. And I'm like, "Grandmother, what will I say?" She said, "Don't worry, Morris will tell you what to say. That will be the easy part today." I spoke for over 20 minutes, and I cannot tell you what I said in those 20 minutes today. I spoke for that man. The pallbearers were all established medicine men in their finest regalia. I'm in a pair of slacks and a button-up shirt, pair of dress shoes. These guys are dressed in their finery. And they're all getting up and shaking my hand, and they're so excited that I'm there. because I'm the right front pallbearer. I'm the man that's there to honor this man. Teachings from that man happen all the time in Indian culture. You have power and an energy that is recognized. So professionally and just in life in general, going to meetings and funerals, naming ceremonies, the people that have the power and insight see that in you. And they seek you out in those crowds. And you recognize it in one another. That type of spiritual background is what puts me in the position today to look after and honor this piece of land, the Methow people, the river, the environment. It's a feel. And so I get up in the morning and I do a prayer that my grandfather taught me. And I watch the sun come up on our valley. I watch the sun hit the mountain behind my house and work its way down to the valley floor. Amazingly, almost every night, my wife and I sit and watch the sun leave the valley. And we watch the valley go to sleep. To teach those grandchildren the significance of that is really our charge right now. Because my children are too busy doing what I was doing. You know, they've got jobs and working like everybody else. It's upon us to take the time to train our grandchildren the culture, the spirituality, and the significance of this land.
Mark Miller, it's been an honor. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's my pleasure. Part of what I am charged with is sharing these stories and sharing who we are. When the fire burnt through these communities years ago, people were talking about how many generations. A friend of mine's family's farmed for 5 generations here. And the moderator, he came back and he asked me, he said, so you never told us how long your family's been here, Mark. I said, oh, that. Well, the nearest I can tell is the last Missoula flood was about 8,000 years ago. So about 8,000 years. Week after that, an archaeologist friend of mine at Eastern Washington University called to see what they could do to help with the fire devastation. And I said, Stan, I've been jokingly tell people my family's been here for 8,000 years. How accurate is that number? He said, we've dated a place in Pasley Caves in Oregon at 13,500 years. That your family's actually on the borders of the flood, not in the middle of the flood. And the floods are summertime events when probably most of your family would be up the valleys in summer camps. They wouldn't be in the floodplain anyway. Said, so that's every indication your family's been there for over 13,000 years. We're bonded to that piece of land we're on for that long. The significant part of the Indian people, the largest population is gone. We've died off. And the only way that Indian issues are going to have any significant place with the government in time is for those non-Indian people to understand us well enough to vote for things that are significant to Indian people.
A lot of it is about allies.
It's the relationships you should form. The old-time Chautauqua folks, Rick Lewis and Peregrine Lake, probably spent over a month getting Paul and I together. Because he met Paul and he liked what old-time Chautauqua was trying to do, and he told Paul, he says, you need to be talking to Mark Miller in Pateras. He said, he has the pulse of a community that can help you do that stuff. And so once Paul and I actually did a couple phone conversations and then actually visited and sat down together and could come to a common ground, and it was like, okay, now I understand where old-time Chautauqua was coming from. And how that can have a pretty strong relationship with the Indian people in an area. And the really awesome part is the area is alive. And there are people, significant non-Indian people, that are starting to feel that pulse. And that's the part that's going to change. That's the part that's going to make us take care of the water, take care of the land, take care of the air. And those are the things that keep us healthy and spiritually significant. And that spirituality is inside of everybody. It's just closer to the surface for us.
As long as the wind shall blow, as long as the grass shall grow, as long as the stream shall flow, as long as the sun shall glow, this land, this land shall be the Indian Hey, yande, yande,
This is Chris Bricker for KPTZ Community Radio News.
The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. with a repeat Saturday at noon, exclusively here on KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend.